Do your heart a favor. Quit smoking. Smoking causes immediate damage to your body. For Roosevelt, it caused his heart attack. Your heart attack risk drops as soon as you quit smoking. Talk with your doctor for help or for free help. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Sponsored by the Texas Department of State Health Services.
Everyone, this is Michael Vandervoort. I'm pinch hitting today for Nisha and William Tincup, and we're going to do a show on global HR and some workforce planning with Lorraine Townsend, who is also on Twitter as HR Energy Girl. Hello, Lorraine. How are you today?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. I'm sorry we kind of threw a last minute wrinkle in on the guest host thing, but we'll have some fun if that's okay. Why don't you start out by telling us who you are and what you do, and kind of illuminate everybody about that.
Sure. I feel like starting by saying something really dorky, like long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, I'm second-time host, so we're there being dorks together. So.
There you go. So, yeah, my name is Lorraine Vargas Townsend. I'm the global HR VP for Schneider Electric. Well, not for all of Schneider Electric. I support basically a 2 billion euro business that we call the IT channel. And I can tell you a little bit more about that in a second, but I thought I might talk about myself because that's my favorite topic.
Absolutely.
So on the more personal side, I'm a Texan. I consider myself a global citizen, though, because we lived in Paris for almost 5 years. I've traveled to 37 countries, and I've managed teams in 7 of those countries. And I guess basically my biggest hobby or interest is I really love exploring new geographies, cultures, foods especially, and languages. And working at Schneider has really given me an opportunity to live like a global life, if you want to call it that. So I'm married to a beautiful girl who has really supported my career, and basically she's been my personal assistant, my fitness coach, my nutritionist. In addition to uprooting every time Schneider and I decide it's a good idea for me to move. So our mobility team inside Schneider Electric calls her a trailing spouse. I think that's a pretty ugly title. But so a little bit about Schneider Electric maybe.
Sure. Yeah, that would have been my astute follow-up question. Tell us about Schneider and what they do.
Yeah, so we're basically the biggest company that no one's ever heard of. We're a 23.6 billion euro company. We have 150,000 plus employees, and we sit in more than 100 countries. So we like to call ourselves the global specialist in energy management. And, you know, right now it's very in vogue. Everybody's talking about reducing their carbon footprint and being more energy efficient. And the reason that we all talk about that is because there is really an energy dilemma. You know, if you look at energy consumption of people on our planet today, and you factor in the expectation that we want to and should be able to provide instantaneous energy to everyone everywhere so that they can charge their cell phones and, you know, turn on their lights and run their businesses. And then you factor in the population growth and people who didn't have access to energy and electricity before being added to the grid, we humans will demand twice the energy we use than what we use today by 2050. And at the same time, we have to reduce our CO2 emissions by half in order to avoid dramatic climate change, basically. So to solve the dilemma, you can look at things like the supply side of energy, like having cleaner energy sources or alternative sources, but those take a lot of time and money to implement. So Schneider Electric, we really focus on the demand side. So we have solutions that can help businesses be more efficient with their energy today. We help them to measure their consumption. We fix the basics. We automate to help them improve their consumption. And in fact, with our solutions, we like to say that our customers can save up to 30% of their energy spend and also make it safer, more reliable, more efficient, and more green. So hopefully that makes sense.
it I mean, it definitely is. I mean, with there, you know, I was just in Texas a couple months back and had a conversation with somebody who does more, you know, like oil rig work. This guy was I don't know what his job was, but he worked on rigs in the Gulf, and he was very concerned because of the price of oil dropping and layoffs, and you know, energy is such an ongoing and dynamic thing that I think it definitely makes sense, and it's definitely. Very interesting field. So Schneider, where's the world headquarters, and where in the U.S.? Where you're in Rhode Island, right?
Yeah, weird place to be, but our headquarters are in Paris. Well, outside of Paris in France,
okay.
Texas, called Rueil-Malmaison.
Okay.
And our North American headquarters are in Boston.
Okay.
And the business that I support is called. The IT business. So we provide most of those kinds of solutions for data center customers. And we sit in West Kingston, Rhode Island, which is kind of out in the country and right across from a lumberyard.
Okay. All right. So global VP of HR across the road from a lumberyard.
That's right.
Yeah. So when you lived in, I'm gonna do a couple quick hit things here before we get into the bigger DTHR traditional questions. So you lived in Paris for 5 years. I guess you did that while with Schneider, right? So you're at their global headquarters then.
That's right.
Tell people. I mean, like I've worked for many European based companies, but tell people what it's like to be an expat if you can briefly.
That's a good question. Being an expat, it's a not as glamorous as everyone wants it to be, especially when you live in a place like Paris. You know, it's kind of not acceptable for you to complain. So I'll kind of start by that. Like the first year that we moved to France, it was really quite tumultuous. Neither of us spoke French. We moved with two of our dogs, and within the first like 6 months, our dog died. So we had like really personal tragedy. And, you know, what the mobility groups and the kind of cultural training groups like to say is that when you're an expat, you go through this thing called the Valley of Despair. And I would say for a year we went through the Valley of Despair, just kind of trying to get our feet under us and trying to recover. So after that, though, I mean, the number one thing I'll say about being an American on a European expat assignment is that you get, at least with Schneider, I got French vacation. And I'll tell you what, that is the most beautiful experience that anyone can ever have.
So, like, you shut down for the whole month of August, and you get two weeks at Christmas and all that kind of stuff, right?
I had something like 47 days or some nonsense like that. And you were legally obligated to take 3 consecutive weeks between, like, July and the end of August. And so the awesome thing is that everybody's taking off in August, and then with a global company like Schneider, you know, it's not unusual. A lot of Europe is shutting down during that time, and the Americans and the Chinese people know that if they send you an email message during that time, you're not going to answer it. So basically, you really get to be off for that time. That was a hard part of coming back to the United States, for sure.
How about stuff like if, well, this is one more question on that. So if you're somebody who aspires to be an expat but has never lived through the experience, what kind of tips would you give an HR person, or I guess any person in business really, but specifically HR? How do you go about getting that kind of assignment?
I love that question. You know, when I came to the reason I joined Schneider Electric actually is because they were a global company, and I, for some reason, always had it in my mind that I was going to work in Spain. They had a headhunter called me. I basically ignored some of the calls, and then finally I found on their website that they were really such a huge and global company. So at that point, I really switched on to like sales girl Lorraine, and like, you're going to hire me no matter what. So when I got the job, within like the first couple of months, all I did was kind of meet with everyone I could to say, okay, how do I get an international role? And so I made it very clear from the day I was inside Schneider, the day I got my badge, I made it clear that I was very mobile, and that I had aspirations of working internationally. The funny thing was, the guy who hired me told me that we didn't really give expat assignments to HR people. Like, they're right. Basically there for everybody except for HR. And I guess my advice to HR people is don't accept that answer. I didn't. I found a way to get invited to an executive development program that was global. And once I made some connections inside our headquarters, you know, every single time I met a person in corporate HR, I was saying, like, okay, how do I get here? How do I get an international assignment? Eventually, my annoying personality paid off. Very, very persistent.
So persistence and chasing the opportunity is the closer on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're global. You have a perspective of multiple employees in multiple countries, presumably, and you're European. I work for several European companies, and we were often subject to, you know, the exchange of whether it be euros or other European currencies. How is the current how is the current drop on the European side affecting you, and what kind of HR issues, not you personally, but your company, and how is it affecting you from an HR policy perspective or comp perspective?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think, we do pay a lot of attention to the changes in currency because it has a big impact on our conversion rates, on how we're counting our money, but of course it also has some impact on, you know, hiring and support function costs and our ability to grow costs or reduce costs. And with the crisis, if you will, that happened in Europe, and now China is also starting to have some problems, and Russia is, I mean, well, we don't even need to talk about Russia. It's insane right now. All of that, of course, is impacting our bottom line. So what we have to do and what we have to be is super agile as an organization and as an HR function to be able to really pay attention to our global footprint for our employees, but also to be able to switch, you know, pull the right levers to control things like, salary planning, which is happening right now, to be able to make sure we have budgets that make sense and don't get us into trouble. to make sure that, you know, even though these things are happening in Europe, the U.S. is looking really good right now, so we need to make sure we're fast enough to staff up what we need in the U.S. to be able to attack the market here. You know, at the end of the day, we're so global, so we can kind of diversify that risk, but as an HR function, we have to be able to kind of switch gears that fast. It's not easy. It's not easy in a big, big company. That's for sure.
Yeah. That was my experience as well. pardon me. So let's jump over to the more traditional script of drive-through, which is at least in the other time I did it, it's what I tried to stick to. And that is a kind of a classic question. You touched a little bit on maybe some of it already, but what from an HR perspective or a business perspective keeps you and your company up at night?
Yeah, let's talk about HR maybe for a minute, which, you know, right now it's the most wonderful time of the year, right? So we're in the middle of every freaking HR process known to man. So performance appraisals are happening right now. We're getting ready for incentive payouts, objective setting, and salary planning. And I have the excellent role of making sure that we're giving our managers and our employees, you know, great HR delivery around the world. And, in the meantime, we're also transitioning the HRIS tool that supports these processes. So if I would say, you know, kind of what's keeping me up at night or what's giving me ulcers right now, it's that it's that kind of stuff, which is very tactical and you know, not glamorous and kind of not so fun to talk about, but has a big impact on the real life, and, you know, us being able to deliver the workforce to deliver the business results means that we have to pay them and we have to evaluate them and make sure that they know what their objectives are. So it's kind of HR basics for me in my life right now. But at the same time, we're also doing some restructuring. So we are in the process of realigning our organization to really focus on a specific part of our business that's called the channel business. So we're trying to focus our leaders on making sure that our channel partners are very successful in their business. So you know how it is at big companies. You know, when you want to change your organization and you want to kind of shift gears, no one is going to give you like a bag of money.
Really?
So, no, unfortunately not. So we're really like in this process of strategic workforce planning where we're looking at like what's our 3 to 5 year strategy, how do we translate that into a number of headcounts and competencies and critical roles, and, you know, keeping in mind all the constraints we have about reducing our support function costs and prioritizing our spending. So what that all means is we have to figure out ways to make efficiency in our, we like to call it our business as usual, or, you know, the stuff, our cash cow kind of businesses to help us fund and finance the areas that we need to refocus on. So it's that's really how we do strategic workforce planning at Schneider. We kind of start from your business plan and strategy. We look at the constraints of your support function costs, and then we go through a really kind of systematic and almost, I would call it scientific, although I support a lot of engineers, so they would laugh at me for saying scientific, but let's say anyway, it's a systematic process where we're really looking at where we can make productivity to fund and finance our new stuff, our new sexy stuff, so that we can make sure that we're keeping the lights on, keeping the business running, but also paying for the new cool stuff that we want to go do.
Okay. Great. What is Schneider's, Schneider Electric, obviously. So what's your main talent? What do you look for in terms of talent pools? Are you hiring electrical engineers, or, I mean, what's your challenging talent struggle, I guess, is the question I'm trying to get to.
Well, you name it, basically, we hire it. We do have a ton of engineers, power engineers and electrical engineers for sure, product marketing guys or girls.
Yeah.
Let me just go out and put out that disclaimer. I say guys all the time, and I do mean guys and girls, so forgive me, all you HR PC kind of people out there. marketing, for sure, product management, you know, I guess we do basically hire everything. And, you know, what are we looking for? Kind of what would set you apart to be someone that we would want at Schneider would be that you're really someone who is innovative, who is connected to kind of future technologies, and really someone who fits in with our values and our culture. So we, you know, because we're in so many different countries, we have lots of different quote-unquote cultures that we have to manage. And we're also a company that's made up of lots of mergers and acquisitions. So we have this, you know, lots of competing cultures that are kind of coming together to make up Schneider Electric. So we really like to focus on what's our global like value system and what do we want to see as far as behaviors and leadership skills, no matter what country you come from and also no matter what company you come from. So in that, we are really looking for people who are super passionate, who are open, who are straightforward, and who are really effective at working in such a global and matrix and complicated environment.
Which is a critical skill for any company, but it really matters in one like yours, where you're talking about, you know, people who may move into different business sectors and to different countries and even perhaps different departments, you know, it all over the place, I guess. What about things like at Schneider, like when I worked for a French company once upon a time, and this was over 20 years ago, so I don't know how, what we found was that the French philosophy and the U.S. philosophy, you know, towards workers, there's a much more, you know, people have, in Europe often have employment contracts, and it's hard, you know, if you have to do what you're just describing about restructuring, it's a lot harder because you're blocked. The legal atmosphere and the compliance atmosphere in the U.S. is probably more business friendly from that perspective, but the European management often struggled with that kind of stuff. How do you guys bridge that with your corporate folks in France?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny that we're headquartered in France, but our CEO likes to say that we're a global company. Like, if you're in France, we're a French company. If you're in Germany, we're a German company. So it is kind of funny because there are so many kind of different factors to take in mind. And when you're restructuring in this kind of global environment, it's super important that you're connected into the local country HR people. So I run a global business. I have some global HR VPs who report to me, but I also, thank God, have some people who sit in the country and who report up into the country HR organizations and who are kind of more on the tactical side. So they do the things like dealing with, you know, the very specific unions or the specific kind of contracts that we have to have in all the countries. But yeah, you know, as I'm going through this process right now of the workforce planning and the restructuring of this IT channel business, I absolutely have to pay attention to things like in Germany, if I'm going to change someone's boss, I have to give them something like a 2-day notice period, and I have to work that through the union and get it approved before I can actually communicate it to the organization. So it makes the planning part a lot more complicated. It makes the kind of network part super more important because, like I said, I have to rely on those subject matter experts. It means that I have to have someone on my team who's an amazing project planner who can kind of work backwards from, okay, this is our drop-dead deadline for announcing the organization, and these are all the kind of milestones we have to meet in every specific country before we can go forward with announcements, before we can go forward with execution and implementation. So, yeah, it's complicated, but it's fun. I mean, that's why I like global HR. I think at this point in my career, if I just had really a North America focusing job, I think that would be really hard for me.
It would be boring. Let me do a very quick reset. I probably should have done it about 5 minutes ago. This is Drive Through HR. I'm Michael Vandervoort. I'm guest hosting today, covering for William and Nisha, and our guest is Lorraine Townsend, who is with Schneider Electric, a global business that no one has ever heard of before. And she's telling us about that, and you can find her on Twitter at HR Energy Girl. We've talked about some widely diverging things. I'd like to jump to another topic. You brought up at the very beginning when you introduced yourself that you're married to a woman who has done a number of things for you, and I'm looking at your Twitter account, LGBT stuff. And I'm curious, I would assume Schneider is very, very supportive of all that, and sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot there with that assumption.
No, I love all these questions you're asking me. This is great. So it's funny. You know, my first job when I came out of college was at Dell, and Dell is probably the most gay-friendly organization
mm-hmm.
out there. I mean, at least one of the top five, I would say. So I actually you know, was out from the day I started at Dell because it was just kind of normal, even though it was the 90s and, you know, whatever. And I was in Texas, so it wasn't, it maybe shouldn't have been as easy for me as it was, but it was really easy.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came to Schneider, I started for Schneider in a little town called Laverne, Tennessee. And I started.
What's the biggest city that's close to? Nashville, Knoxville?
Yeah,
Chattanooga?
It's close to Nashville. Close
okay.
to Nashville.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I was a little bit nervous about, like, oh, you know, this is kind of a more industrial company. They're not super high tech. They didn't have domestic partner benefits at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is going to be weird. But I don't know how to be anything but out. So I'm not real sure how this is going to work out. I guess I'm going to shock them, but it'll be okay. So basically that's what I did. I kind of, you know, from my first day, like, it's a really family-oriented company, and this little group of engineers that I supported in Tennessee, like, they were blown away by me, I think. You know, the guy who hired me had a picture of George Bush on his desk when I went
mm-hmm.
in there. So
mm-hmm.
I knew what I was getting into. But I've always been kind of one of those people that I think that, I'm naive, but I think people don't really know that gay people come in all different, like, sizes and styles and shapes and personalities. So if you're not super out at work or in your life, then you're letting all these people kind of like you and know you and have no idea that they actually like and know a gay person. So, so I've just always been super out. So, yeah, they were nervous. They didn't know what to think about it. But eventually they just liked me and they kind of accepted it and went with it, let's say, in the North America organization. When I moved to France, it was like a super cool thing about me. Like everyone like knew I was gay. They were like, oh, and they liked to talk about it and it wasn't so taboo. So I have felt very comfortable at Schneider Electric. There are other people inside Schneider who are not so out as me, but I think it's kind of more their personal style than the fact that maybe Schneider would be unfriendly to them, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have domestic partner benefits, but now, you know, gay people can get married in the United States in a lot of states, so you would be able to kind of cover people on insurance and stuff like that, but that was always my first signal to see, like, do you cover same-sex partnerships or not? Then I kind of know what I'm dealing with.
Well, yeah, and I think too, you know, it's like 37 states or something now. Alabama started issuing same-sex marriage licenses earlier this week, I think, maybe under a little protest. But, you know, it's kind of like major protest. I don't know. Anyway, it's kind of the groundswell of today. I mean, and there's, you know, the same thing with, and it's not, it doesn't just seem to be lesbian and gay. I mean, there seems to be more mainstream discussion, you know, characters around transgender. I mean, it just seems like there's
a
move. Bruce Jenner. I mean, I know. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of people will make jokes. And so, but I mean, it's interesting to me. I mean, that our society has moved in seemingly a very progressive way when we're not really that way in so many other areas. That somehow this issue has found a path and it's working. It's not an issue. But I was curious if you did any, like, not you personally, but at Schneider, if you guys did anything like affinity groups or any other thing like that, or is it just kind of like particular part of the business just handled as part of the business, and with domestic partner benefits you already touched on. Do you do anything else in terms of policies or outreach or anything like that?
Unfortunately, not really. I would say we kind of have an informal network of, you know, like people who know each other. I would say at Schneider, we really focus a lot on building gender diversity more than anything else, kind of globally.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a safe thing to drive no matter what country you're in,
mm-hmm,
no matter
mm-hmm.
how they feel about, you know, about same-sex kind of relationships and stuff. If you get into some of our, you know, for instance, some of our Arabic countries, probably it would not be a place where we would be able to drive kind of gay affinity groups. So, we focus really a lot on trying to build gender, and that's a good starting point for me. I do really hope that that I can help influence that in the future, though, because I think there's a big opportunity to be able to reach out into the gay community. I saw that pay off in big returns at Dell. We had really great, amazing talents who, you know, moved up in all levels of the organization who just also happened to be gay. So I would love that, but we're not there yet.
Okay. Yeah, very cool. So we're down to the last 3 minutes. And I've asked you questions like literally all over the globe, so I appreciate the great answers. Is there anything that you'd like to tell us that I haven't asked you about? Some big thing you'd like to share, or anything that some topic you'd like to touch on?
Gosh, that's really an open question.
Yeah, it's the best kind, right? What's your favorite interview question? How's that?
Oh my goodness! My favorite interview question, it's probably something around how do you as a leader go about like upgrading talent and also removing organizational barriers? I would say, you know, that's the whole idea of like collaboration or balancing collaboration and consensus building with you know, real decision making and execution. You know, that's something I'm pretty obsessed with and trying to make sure we're building into our profiles of people at Schneider, because we do have to do both of those things. And, you know, we do have to make sure we're holding people accountable and getting to execution, even though we have lots of different cultural differences and different, you know, styles of decision making. You know, I think that's probably something that I'm really focused on these days.
Great. down to the last couple minutes, I see you've been on Twitter since 2010, HR Energy Girl. Do you use social media and in other ways? And maybe you can tell people how they can find you as we head into the wrap here. We're down to like 60 seconds or so, probably.
Sure. So I'm out there on LinkedIn. You can find me with Lorraine Vargas Townsend. I'm also on Twitter at HR Energy Girl. Those are the only two places I'm at so far. And I have been on there since 2010, but I'd say I've been really active in the last year. So.
Okay. Yeah, and you actually beat Schneider to Twitter because they show the date you joined now, and you were on 2010, and your company joined in 2011. I was scrolling through, and you guys have like all kinds of different. And this is just head out. So, all right. So thanks for being on Drive Through HR. Our guest today was Lorraine Townsend from Schneider Electric. This is Michael Vandervoort, and we're getting ready to wrap up. So thanks very much for being here, and let's tell everyone goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.